This topic that I'm on today, as I've gone through a couple sermons regarding having zeal, which again can be something that can be taken away from us so quickly with all the things that are going on. It's really, I know, discouraging for me as I've seen the state of this country, no doubt for you too. When we see the ignorance that's out there, I remember this was years ago, but it's when Jay Leno used to do his neighborhood walks and visits and go ask people questions, and you would see the ignorance that's out there. For instance, when someone was asked at a college graduation who the four figures were on Mount Rushmore, they said, "That's not my field of study." And so what we're finding more and more is history has not been taught. And therefore, as the old saying goes, if you don't know your history, you tend to repeat it, and which we are. And so we're seeing the same thing, for instance, as we can put our feet in the sandals of the Israelites and those even of Judah. You would think that after Israel was taken into captivity, Judah would have a little bit more of a heads up. It didn't last very long. I think it was just over 100 years. And Judah started to worship the other gods and go down before they were taken into captivity as well. And now we're watching some of the same things that are taking place in our nation. It's very sad. I might have mentioned this, but I know, I can't remember, it had to be in the 70s, possibly even the 60s. I know my mom had a book called the NEA, the Trojan Horse of America, National Education Association. And what it talked about was all the ignorance and the liberality that was going to come into our education system. And now what we're seeing as a result of this, we're seeing an absolute result of this. The kids aren't taught history. They have no idea. They're pulling down statues. They're pulling down the heritage. They want to destroy Mount Rushmore. I mean, all the things that are taking place, you know, with faulty arguments, false arguments. If you go back and listen to Mr. Kylo's sermon on Joseph's blessings, Joseph's promises, the ignorance toward that is just incredible. People would accuse you, point the finger at you saying that you're a supremacist or you think that you're better than anybody. I believe that we all know that we got here as a result of God's mercy. Nothing by that we did that was good. You know, yet God blessed us as a result of the promises to Abraham. You know, this country has, and Britain for that matter, has made a lot of mistakes, has done a lot of atrocious things. If you go back and look at I think it was called the heroin wars or opium wars. That's right, opium wars, to see how Britain was involved with that and just all the atrocious things. And yet there have been good things that have been done by Britain and by this country. And so, but that ignorance is just going to be propagated and it's going to get worse. So we're watching that now. We can be mindful of what the Israelites went through, as a lot of people sorrowed after that, because the good ones God spared and took them into captivity. That's why you get the stories of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Those men were spared, and they were given actually high appointments under the king. So we've got those testimonies. Others were also taken into captivity and spared. And so you know, we see history. We can be assured that it's repeating itself again only in the modern day. So what I'd like to talk about today is something that's very important. Without it, there's no way that we would ever be in God's kingdom. We have to have it and we have to receive it. What do you think that would be? Now, there are a couple of things that you realize in order to attain entrance into God's kingdom. First of all, yes, it's absolute grace. There's no doubt about that. We have to have God's favor and mercy. I just spilled it, didn't I? I just spilled it. You have to have mercy. We have to have mercy. We sing it. Be merciful to others as our Father is to us. Without it, we can't obtain mercy. So if we don't give it, there's no way we can receive it. Other factors that are so important when you talk about love, when you talk about humility. Christ himself said, without humility, there's no entrance. If you don't have the humility, it says, of this little child, there's no entrance into God's kingdom that way either. I'm not going to talk about that today. I'm going to talk about mercy. Really like to grasp that what we need so bad and how merciful God is. There are those today that believe that there is a God that is different from the God of the Old Testament. It seems evident to some that the God of the New Covenant is kinder. Remember, I think it was one of our presidents, President Bush, said we're a kinder and a gentler nation. One of his quotes he used. As opposed to the cruel and harsh God who led the Israelites out of Egypt through the ruthless killing of the firstborn and on through Canaan, where so many men, women, and children and animals were victimized by a God who either killed them or drove them out. But how many read the Bible and have the understanding it takes to really know God, the same yesterday, today, and forever? What does it mean for you and I? Let's go to Exodus chapter 20 and verse 1. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 1. I took the kids through a tour, the preteens through a tour of the incident of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, which is so interesting how it coincides exactly with this. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 1. God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God who has brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. So yes, there was slavery taken back all the way back there. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make to you any graven image or any likeness of anything that's in heaven above or that's in the earth beneath or that's in the water under the earth. Now, we have to specify this again, not that there was anything wrong with making an image. We have lots of images today. You have all kinds of animal images. Maybe you've got, I think we have a buffalo still or something like that. I inherited from my mom, and we have, a giraffe figurine, too. In the Temple of Solomon, do you remember what they had in there? Huge cherubim. And so that was a likeness of something in heaven, right? So the point is there wasn't anything wrong with having an image. It was bowing down to it. It was worshiping an image that was the problem. It says, verse 5, you shall not bow down yourself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children until the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, and showing mercy to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. So God is a merciful God, and those two commandments right there are the ones that saved Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. If you remember what took place, the huge image. And you know, Nebuchadnezzar was so filled with himself that he made of himself an image, and he put it out in the plain. It doesn't specify exactly where it was, but I think it was probably on a major trade route as it came into Babylon, so everybody would see it. But he went beyond that. He wanted everybody now to come in. It says all the different leaders that they had then. When you look back, it talks about sheriffs and captains and governors and all kinds of rulers. Everybody had to come, and everybody had to kneel down to this image. Or you're thrown into the fiery furnace. I mean, it's an old, you know, it seems like an old child's tale in a way. But it's so interesting putting yourself in the shoes of these men. Would you like to be as strong and courageous as they were? Because it was just a no-brainer to them. It was just a no-brainer. You know, what if you're called on the spot? What if you saw that furnace, how hot it was? Because I thought sometimes, could we not reason a little bit? Could these guys not reason just a little bit and say, let's make it look like we're kneeling down, but we'll just be an inch above the ground. We won't totally kneel. And yet there was no question. When you look at the response, it says, we have no need to answer you here. There's no chance we're going to do this. And if you choose to throw us in, hey, God's going to save us. But even if he doesn't, it's still a no-brainer. And he is able to deliver us. I love that response. And I love to have that courage in the future, because this kind of thing is going to come upon us. We don't know exactly what this mark of the beast is, do we? But what if they say, hey, you either accept this mark or you don't buy or sell? Well, are we going to go, no brainer? Or are we going to kind of go, well, man, if I don't get this, I can't buy or sell. But you know the result. Anybody that accepts the mark, you're really in deep trouble. Because we kind of have an outcome here. It should make it a little bit easier. You're either toast here or you're toast here. I'd rather be toast here. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were preparing to be toast. But instead of them being toast, the valiant men that Nebuchadnezzar had him throw in, it was so hot that it killed them. So we see a miracle right there. I can't wait to meet these guys. No, wouldn't that be interesting? Talk to these guys. What was that really like? All the extra detail that we can get. God's mercy is so incredible. First Kings chapter 8 and verse 17. You know, David was, God's called him a man of war, so he wasn't allowed to build the temple. But God was also so merciful to David, and David spoke of his mercy. We sing about what David said about God's mercy. He knew it. He understood it. So he allows Solomon, though, the son, to do this. And what's so incredible here is you see Solomon who asks in the dream of what he would like after God offered him whatever you want. What are you asking for? And God says wisdom and understanding and discernment and all these interesting things that Solomon wrote about, yet we don't even know the outcome of Solomon. Did he hang in there? Did he recover? Did he not? What did God say? One wife. And I keep thinking back there, we don't know all the history of that, but you figure how many men hated Solomon? How many men of Israel hated this king? He was rated kind of one of the good kings. And yet there were, you know, some things he did which weren't so good. And God still was merciful to him. How many wives and concubines did this man have? You know, one wasn't good enough for him. So somebody else was maybe courting a woman that he wanted to marry. Solomon's guards or Solomon passes by and goes, I want her too. And I want her too. And I want her too. And I want her too. How many guys wanted to kill this king? One's not good enough for you? They knew the law. One wife. You can have all these other ones too? No way. But he still allows Solomon to build the temple. Verse 17 of 1 Kings 8. It was in the heart of David, my father, to build a house for the name of the Lord God of Israel. And the Lord said to David, my father, where it was in your heart to build a house to my name, you did well that it was in your heart. Nevertheless, you shall not build the house, but your son that will come forth out of your loins, he will build the house to my name. And the Lord hath performed his word, what he spoke, and I have risen up in the room of David my father, and sit on the throne of Israel, as the Lord promised, and have built a house for the name of the Lord God of Israel. Once again, bringing it back to today, God said through Joseph, this is what was going to happen. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to let you possess the gate of your enemies. Remember going through that. We see all these gates that we started to forfeit and to lose, Panama City, Straits of Gibraltar, other places like that, bringing it up into modern day history. And it wasn't anything by what we did. It was the blessings that God said to Abraham. And I have set there, verse 21, a place for the ark. More of this in just a little bit. Wherein is the covenant of the Lord which he made with our fathers when he brought them out of the land of Egypt. And Solomon stood before the Lord in the presence of all the congregation of Israel and spread his forth his hands toward heaven. And he said, Lord God of Israel, there is no God like you in heaven or earth or above or in earth beneath who keeps covenant and mercy with your servants that walk before you with all their heart, who has kept with your servant David, my father, that you promised him. You spoke also with your mouth and have fulfilled it with your hand as it is to this day. So you see that kind of mercy which Solomon knew that God extended to David because he no doubt knew the sin that David committed in getting his mom. You know, incredible, heinous thing that David did and a reflection of God's mercy. But not just that, because David, again, was regarded overall as a man after God's heart. He made a mistake, and we all do. All of us make mistakes. You know what happens? We can get down on ourselves so much that it knocks the spiritual wind out of you. You ask yourself, you remember the Apostle Paul said, why do I find it so difficult to do the right thing? Here I know the right thing to do, and I keep doing the wrong thing. And that has got to enter our minds once in a while. Am I ever going to get this right? It's so frustrating. And the thing is, we've got to keep getting up and starting all over and appealing to God. Sometimes it's just incredible that we think, can God be merciful to me again? How many times? Because if I remember accurately, if I'm the numbers cruncher, he said 70 times 7. That's 490. I'm pretty sure in my life I've sinned over 490 times. If I were to count. I wouldn't want to spend time counting. All I know is I think I've exceeded the threshold. So what's that mean? Obviously, Christ meant you get down and you ask for forgiveness, and that's remembering, and part of those points I brought out on the zeal, is remembering that. Remember the commitment that we made, that we're never going to give up. We're going to hang in there. We're going to remember who we are. This nation is forgetting who we are. We're becoming a totally different nation because we've allowed all these others to come in. And you can see the patterns changing and the tattooing and everything else that takes place. It's not the same country that I grew up in. There's still a lot of good that's here, but there's so much that's getting worse as well. So now we go before one here in 1 Kings chapter 21. If this doesn't talk about God's mercy, this was probably one of the worst kings ever. So we go from good kings and Solomon and David who understood and called upon God's mercy. And now we go to one that typically didn't, except for one time that's recorded. 1 Kings 21 verse 25, there was none like unto Ahab, who did sell himself to work wickedness in the sight of the Lord, whom Jezebel his wife stirred up. And he did abominably, very abominably, in following idols, according to all things, as did the Amorites, whom the Lord cast out before the children of Israel. And it came to pass, when Ahab heard those words, that he tore his clothes, put sackcloth upon his flesh, and fasted, and lay in sackcloth, that he went softly. Now you know and I know that you can't fool God. So this wasn't a pretend feature here of Ahab. This man was somehow, something overtook him, and he was so serious about this. And it shocked God. The word of the Lord came to Elijah the Tishbite, saying, see how Ahab humbles himself before me. Because he humbles himself before me, I will not bring the evil in his days, but in his son's days will I bring the evil upon his house. Remember what God said in visiting the iniquity of the fathers to the third and fourth generation. The sins were passed down, and someone else received it. In Deuteronomy chapter 12, Deuteronomy 12, let's go over to verse 29. Deuteronomy 12. Deuteronomy chapter 12, verse 29. When the Lord your God will cut off the nations from before you, where you go to possess them and you succeed them and dwell in their land, take heed to yourself that you not be snared by following them after that they be destroyed from before you, that you inquire not after their gods, saying, how do these nations serve their gods? Even so will I do likewise. Bring it up to today. There have been people I've known for years that were on a steady path. When I look at my path, and maybe you can look at yours too, when I came in and was called into the Church of God, there's not much, I don't believe, at least in my memory, that's really changed. And I'm talking about major, major changes. There was the date of Pentecost. There were other more minor issues, maybe birthday celebrations that still could be a sin if you're looking at yourself. I think that's the whole point. You can't look upon birthdays and all of a sudden, well, they're a sin. It may not be a good idea. I usually tell my kids, call your mom. You had nothing to do with it. And now let's go out for a special dinner or something like that. So we don't make a big to-do, but that's us. But I'm talking about major, major changes as we saw what took place back in the late 80s and into the early 90s. When we saw some major changes that were taking place in the nature of God, the kingdom, all these other things. And then after that, when you start to struggle, as you go through some of the breakups and then start with another church here, another church, and some here have been through different groups as we have as well. But you look back at that and go, you know, I was still believing the same thing. There's nothing that really changed. And yet others today are still going after these other things. Sometimes they'll look at more of the Jewish things. They want some kind of frills or some bells or something extra that gets them off of the straight and narrow path that we're supposed to be on. These other things become more important. People keep seders. And when it's clear that that change came to keep the Passover, they're still into looking to what other people are doing. I'm not. I don't search the internet and follow what other people are doing or watch what this blinding light guy is doing or somebody else or somebody over here. I've got enough on our Life, Hope, and Truth website to take a look at, and this Bible right here that should keep us all very busy and being guided by the help and power of God's Spirit, not being distracted. That's always been a pattern of what's happened. And so he brings it up here. Verse 31, he says, "You shall not do so to the Lord your God, for every abomination to the Lord which he hates they've done to their God, for even their sons and daughters they have burnt in the fire to their gods." That seems incredible. Can you even imagine that? Can somebody that's got some, is there sanity there? Why would they do something like that? I mean, they obviously had to believe in these other gods, but how does the mind get so distorted? Watch what's going on around us. How do people get so uneducated? You can't even talk to somebody about the God that we worship now. They'll think that you're evil. The Bible says that's what's going to be done. Offering your child in a fire, well, we do it a little bit more educated now. We just suck them out. We just put a saline solution in there, let them dissolve the fetus. Or now, take them full term. And that comes from our highest court system in 72. Yeah, you can have your choice. Just go ahead and take your choice, and I will provide institutions for you that you can go there and do it for free, and we'll pay for it. Look what's happened in our country. That was 72. And now, by the way, hey, a guy can marry a guy. And a girl can marry a girl. Well, that's sanity at the maximum. How did we ever get there? And there are people that are actually going to reason with that? That this is just natural. You get doctors, psychologists. What education system did they go through to all of a sudden have that warped sense of mind? And stay tuned, because it's going to get worse. Verse 32, he says, "Whatsoever thing I command you, observe to do it. You'll not add to it nor diminish from it. Not one iota." And so we have the testimonies of the laws of God, of the nature and the character of God, of the mercy and the kindness exhibited by the God of both the Old and the New Covenant. And Christ came to witness of that same law which he had for the Israelites. In Matthew 5, verse 17, he said, "Do not think that I've come to destroy the law. I've not come to destroy, but to fulfill." And so the minister that baptized me at one time said, "Well, once you keep the law, and once you get to Christ, that's it. You can throw away the roadmap." See, that roadmap, he said, led to Christ. I'm thinking, how does your mind get so warped? And so I used an example, the stop sign example. You have your car, you stop at a stop sign. That's the law. Anybody here ever get a rolling stop sign ticket? I remember I got pulled over. I can't remember if I got a ticket. I certainly got a warning. Rolling stop. Because I'm looking, it made sense to me. I could see both ways really clear, came up and rolled and then kind of rolled through it. You know, the stop means you come like this. And then, did you ever try to stop where you don't go back, apply your brakes so soft? You know, the rolling stop, you don't have to do that. A real stop, you're going to stop and then probably just go back a little bit from the inertia is there like that. But, you know, Christ came and stopped at the stop sign. So now you don't have to stop at the stop sign anymore. Does that make sense? It doesn't, does it? So how can one even get to that point of thinking that way? And that's what's happened in our lives, in our lifetime. He said, "For verily I say to you, until heaven and earth pass," and that's not happened yet, "one jot or one tittle will in no way pass from the law until it all is fulfilled." And that's the big problem that people have with interpreted Christ's statement when he said it's finished. What's finished? Remember, people said Mr. Armstrong died. The work is finished. The gospel has been preached. Really? How many people know that man anymore? How many people here knew that we'd be this far past the death of Herbert Armstrong in 1986? We all thought, oh, surely by 2000. I mean, that was the space odyssey. That seemed to be so far out in the distance. And now it's pretty humbling because I believe it's my 45th reunion that would be. If I would go, which I'm not, too much trouble and people remembering things. Oh, you're the guy that this. Oh, why do you remember that stuff? I repented of that. Not that it was anything horrible, but just really, how come people remember that stuff? So, but you know, it's coming faster. And that could be, by the way, depressing, but it shouldn't be for us. See, if we're holding fast, if we're firmly anchored, this stuff, hey, bring it on. Haven't we said that? If we could have the kingdom now and stop this horrible evil that's going throughout the entire world, to stop the suffering, to stop the hurting, that's what it's all about, isn't it? That's what we should be so excited about this. So that's where our focus needs to be. And sometimes we get that spiritual wind knocked out of us. We got to go back to God's mercy. God, you are so merciful. I'm still here. How'd that happen? In fact, many of us would ask, why'd you call me? Was I better than anybody else? No chance. Any of us, did we get here because of some great thing that we did? No. We can't even understand sometimes why God called you and I specifically, hand chosen. And that's why we cannot forget who we are. Not because we're better than anybody else. For some reason, God in his infinite mercy decided to choose you and I for a huge plan that he's got in the future. And that's always been the case as we looked upon that. See, the Pharisees and others added and diminished from God's laws. They were the ones that were harsh and cruel. You get harsh and cruel laws now in man's laws. God is the cruel one. God is the God of love and mercy. That's why he has these rules and commandments, so that man could live in peace. And it's taken us a long time to figure this out. In Matthew chapter 23 and verse 23, we look at all those things, though, all the different commandments that we can go through. And don't forget that sometimes that, you know, it's important to review and to remember those elements. And I've mentioned before, frankly, I got a little criticism for it one time because I talked to the congregation about the 12 tribes. Well, why would I bring those up? Those were all in the past, weren't they? I think they're going to be in the future too, aren't they? Who's the people that God's going to work with? A lot of people are going to be really mad because God is evidently a racist or unfair, because he's going to choose to work with the 12 tribes and also the spiritual people that he's called. People are going to think, well, that's unfair, and God's not an unfair God. But we're going to be prepared not to do what they do today, not to take bribes from other people, not to live even though God's going to bless us so much. But our job is going to be to give, to teach others what we've been given as well. And the word's going to go forth out of Jerusalem, it says, during that 1,000-year millennium. Matthew 23, verse 23, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. The weightier elements, the important elements. Can't get into the kingdom without these. These are just other elements. If we could actually write down, what's it take? What's it take to be a part of God's kingdom? Is it the tithing faithfully? Or that's obviously important. These are called the weightier matters of the law, and he set them apart. Not to leave the other undone, but he says, you've omitted the weightier matters of the law. Because their judgment was harsh, their judgment was unfair, their judgment was skewed, and that's what our judgment is in this land today as well. It's hard to get righteous judgment. And that faith element as well. So let's continue to examine one of these weightier matters here. December 20th, 1943, two planes met over the skies of Western Europe. It's very interesting on these, if you like airplanes. I've always liked to watch the progression of airplanes. That's been another incredible engineering feat. You know, there are certain things that could have happened, by the way, that would have changed the course of this war had Germany developed their fighter, which they were, but we were bombing all their factories. If they would have got their jets up in the air, all the rest of these would have been toast. But the Messerschmitt was still an incredible fighter. It's called the ME-109, the most produced fighter in aviation history. 34,000 built. 385 miles an hour, that's back then. That fast, fuel injected, giving it the edge in diving and climbing. because if you're not fuel injected, you're going to lose power when you go up or going down. So they already had this down. The B-17 Flying Fortress, a devastating long-range bomber able to protect itself due to the strategically placed gun canopies, able to return home despite the damage. You know, when I watched some of these movies, people talked about flying and all that. And I remember flying with my father-in-law in a very old twin-engine Piper Apache. Very old. Had some problems, some issues. But I remember the guys that came down with their planes shot up, and they fueled it back up and went back up in the air again. You know, it's interesting the flight, how it works. It's hard sometimes to bring the way that they're built. The one that I flew on had a big, thick wing. And it's hard to bring that down when you get the airflow over that, even when you have two engines. And I figure, well, we got two. If one goes out, I'm still okay. If two go out, we're a glider. And some of those guys did bring them down, if you remember some of the stories there. In fact, I think it was, I can't remember if that was John F. Kennedy or one of the men that lost all of his inside lights and was looking for the carrier. And he just... This was Jim Lovell. I remember now, Jim Lovell. So he looked down and found this green trail of algae that was in the ocean. And it was stirred up by the aircraft carrier. So he just followed that green trail. Talk about a miracle there. Very interesting. But here we're looking at these two men here. American bomber, his name was Charlie Brown. I'm not sure if they're both living now. The German fighter pilot, 22 kills to his record, former airline pilot from Bavaria, Franz Stieglitz. Is so interesting when you even think about war, the insanity of people just killing each other because of one guy or somebody that wants to get into power, and all of a sudden you're brought into a war that just kills people that could have been and were, ended up becoming friends. So Charlie Brown was farm boy from Western West Virginia, in his own words. He was a B-17 pilot with the United States Army Air Force's 37th Bomber Group stationed in England. Here we got the incident. Stigler had a duty to shoot down the American plane. It was an enemy plane. It was defenseless. It had just bombed Bremen, a chief city of Germany. But instead of shooting it down with one pull of the trigger, he spared it. Why? Well, you got 22 kills. This is an easy kill. You just dropped on this city. And for some reason, he chose not to shoot it down. And this guy lived. You know what happens when, say, one person lives, what a difference it makes? You go back home, maybe he had more kids, he had a family, or if one person is killed, how many people it affects as well, the extended family. So by one incident here, something amazing took place. But it's also very interesting when you see who controls what's going on. God never relinquishes his control. We talked about Satan being the god of this world in a sense. I've always mentioned he's not the god of me. He's not the god of you. He can only do and is limited to certain things. But as people yield to him, that's where he becomes, in a sense, the god. And it does talk about thrones as well. First thing we'll go to is this box we talked about before. Contained three things. Carried by the priest, was made of gopher wood. And it was known as? The Ark of what? And? That's it. But the Ark also of something else. It's called two things. Ark of the Covenant is one. Mercy seat is right on. That's what we're going to talk about as well. It's called the Ark of, remember all the things it had in it. What were those? Yeah, what were those, though? Within God's law, you've got the Aaron's rod that budded. Ark of the Testimony. These were testimonies. That's what's so important. They were testimonies or remembrances that they could remember how God works. So you got this ark, and that by the way, I know it doesn't look like that. I'm pretty certain. I can't say I know what it looks like, but that it doesn't. Raiders of the Lost Ark? No way. Those are Rolls-Royce bumpers or hood ornaments. you know, when you see what it talks about, we'll take a look at that, see what it actually looks at. But the most important part, Mr. Baker brought that out. But let's go first about these thrones and look how leaders today represent themselves as we went through Nebuchadnezzar and the statue that he built to himself. We don't know where his throne is, but we know about some other thrones. Thrones are more than just an elaborate chair. They're emblematic of the reign of a king. Emperor Akito has what's called the chrysanthemum throne, the sign of purity. Very interesting. Would you ever get a seat for yourself and call it the sign of purity? Not me. I mean, I guess after I pray to God and ask for his mercy, I'll hurry up and sit on it just for a short time. Because now he cleanses us of all, you know, of all iniquity, certainly does. And you're clean until the next time you sin. But here's one throne. The peacock throne, the throne of the Shah of Iran, emblematic of wealth. Emblematic of wealth. So here, showing off which Nebuchadnezzar did as well, because the statue was made of gold. I mean, that had to be an incredible statue. And again, everybody bowed down to it except those three guys. Now, Revelation describes Satan's throne. Very interesting what it talks about there. Revelation, let's go to chapter 2, verse 11. Let me back up here first. Let's go to Revelation chapter 2, verse 11. This is really interesting because there is still something in, it's housed in it's called the Pergamum Museum in Berlin, Germany. And it's thought it's an altar, but it's also thought to be, by some scholars, to be known as the throne of Satan, referred here in Revelation. Revelation 2, verse 11 says, "He that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes will not be hurt by the second death. To the angel of the church in Pergamos write, these things says he who has the sharp sword with two edges. I know your works, where you dwell, even where Satan's seat." This is the Greek word for, it's called thronos. Satan's seat. Now, again, we can all, it's really hard to grasp this in a sense, but would you have wanted to live there? I don't think that's a place I'd want to be hanging out, but people in God's church did. And they were also, they did good things, as it says here. It says, "You hold fast my name." Hold fast. So we're talking about what we're talking about with the kids now. Goes through the whole church. We're trying to hold fast as well to what is good. "You've not denied my faith. Even in those days where Antipas was my faithful martyr, who was slain among you where Satan dwells." So this was not an easy place to live. Now you wonder what it's going to get like. And again, November is going to make a big, big difference on this nation when it comes to religious groups, any of them, because of the hatred against people that believe in God. And you get the certain group in that don't believe in God. And they're going to make it very difficult. It's going to be very different times that we live in. And I think we can all, God's giving us a taste. He's going, I'm showing you pieces of what's going on here. You saw a long time ago what happened with, I think it was the IRS, what took place there, and how hard it was for Christians to, they were coming after their tax returns and things of that nature. So that was just a little sign there. But he said, "I have a few things against you because you have those there who hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols and to commit fornication." Well, the Corinthian church had that problem, didn't they? So it wasn't unusual. In fact, the shocker was here, it was in the church of God. Do you think that we've never had that in the church of God before? A lot of people don't come to church anymore because they saw that in the church of God. And there were those people that never agreed with that, that never okayed that, that knew that that was wrong and that should be put out of God's church. Not allowed, not be transferred somewhere else. No. You put that person out until they repent. So it's always happened along in the church, but this happened back at this time as well. "So I have also those who hold to the doctrine of the Nicolaitans, which things I hate." So we've got to watch things of not adding to or diminishing from God's law and do those with all of our gusto so we don't creep into the other things as well. Again, we can have lots of examples. even today. But this great altar of Pergamum is considered to be one of the greatest surviving monuments from antiquity. It's located in the Pergamum Museum in Berlin, Germany. I don't think I'd want to go there. Really don't think that's a place I would like to visit. I'll look at the pictures. Here's God's throne, called the mercy seat. Not the great, the throne of gold or the one of purity. God himself contains all those, but it's called the mercy seat. Of all the virtues of God, the one he's chosen on which to base his reign is mercy. That's why I went back to Ahab. When you see how bad it gets, Exodus 25, I'll just read it from here. I know that's a little bit too far, so I'll read this from verse 17, Exodus 25. You shall make a mercy seat of pure gold. 2.5 cubits shall be its length and 1.5 cubits its width. You shall make 2 cherubim of gold, hammered work you shall make them at the 2 ends of the mercy seat. Interesting. So they did make images, but they weren't to worship them. You shall put the mercy seat on top of the ark. So that's why, how can you have a mercy seat on top of the ark that's covered with wings? That didn't make sense, did it? If you got to have an ark, you've got to have a seat. As best as we can draw anyway here. In the ark you shall put the testimony. That's what was called the ark, or the testimony. What testimony? Verse 22, and there I will meet with you, and I will speak with you from above the mercy seat, from between the 2 cherubim, which are on the ark of the testimony, about everything which I will give you in commandment to the children of Israel. In 1 Samuel chapter 4 and verse 4, it says here, so the people sent to Shiloh, and they might bring from there the ark of the covenant of the Lord of hosts, who dwells between the cherubim. And the 2 sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. You know the story of Hophni and Phinehas and some other ones. You know, it's interesting, if you've been over to Jerusalem, you might not be able to find the stone that killed Goliath, the burning bush, who knows what happened to that. There's some no doubters there, though. Hezekiah's tunnel, fascinating. I mean, that you can know is real, built in the time of Hezekiah. Very interesting. Another thing. Just being on the plain of Shiloh or Shiloh, on that plain, nothing really there, but it's a plain plain. Nothing there except for what happened. Anybody remember what happened on the plain of Shiloh? Remember when the Philistines were a thorn and they came and took the ark on that plain? That's where Eli fell over on his and broke his neck and died there. And I'm thinking, I'm standing here, I'm going, this happened here. You can't change the plain of Shiloh. Now, there's question about Mount Sinai, where that's at. I mean, some think they know where that is. I'm not sure myself. Doesn't really matter. I think we may have climbed it, but then I kind of go, maybe it wasn't this one. I don't know. But that's where we looked all over for the burning bush and just could not find that. But here, when you get this, you know what you can't find nowadays either? Some think that they're going to find it, but you can't find the ark. You know, you ever see the stories about Noah's Ark? I saw some really interesting stories and documentaries about it. They thought they had found this, but evidently that wasn't it. Now, there is one over as you go toward Ohio. It's there. That's the Ark. I heard it's fascinating for those that would like to see something pretty neat. I've not seen that yet, but I heard it's the Ark Encounter, it's called. Very interesting. But here we get to mercy. What is mercy? No, I don't want to go there yet. I want to go to Hebrews chapter 9, verse 4. Hebrews 9, verse 4. Let's go back a little bit first. Hebrews chapter 9, verse 4, because I want to talk a little bit more about the ark and speak about that here. Hebrews 9, verse 4. Now, they did find very interesting scrolls. You know, that's been an interesting find, you know, years ago. But you and I don't need scrolls. I didn't need those to affirm the Bible or God, but interesting finds nonetheless. I just don't think it's going to be there. And the point is, it's just a copy anyway. That was just a copy. Hebrews 9 verse 4, it says, which had the golden censer. Here's the things that were in the ark. The golden censer, The Ark of the Covenant overlaid about round with gold, wherein was the golden pot that had the manna, and Aaron's rod that budded, and the tables of the covenant. And over it the cherubims of glory shadowing the mercy seat, shadowing. So if they shadowed the mercy seat, then they had to be over the mercy seat, if you're going to shadow. So this thing had to be, when we see the real thing, it's going to be interesting. And by the way, when you see it, you're going to see the real cherubim too, not figurines. Fascinating how this is going to look. You and I, we're going to see this. You will see the Ark of the Covenant. You'll see probably see the real Ten Commandments. I don't know how God maybe took those and has preserved those. I think they're pretty important. Afterwards, you know, after all, Moses broke the first set. God said, I'm going to make another set. And don't break these. No, it says though here, of which we cannot now speak particularly. Why? Because they never saw the ark. They never saw it. So they can only give certain clues like we can as well. So we come up to here. What is mercy? We sing about this a lot. Psalm 136 in verse 1. The word occurs 261 times in the Bible, quite an important subject and characteristic. In Psalm 136, you know, it's interesting because the Bible warns against vain repetition, but here the word is used 25 times. You know, we always see when God has mentioned something, allowed something to be spoken of in the Bible more than one time, twice, three times. You know of one, the soul that sins shall die. That's one of the first ones I remember seeing in repetition, mentioned twice. This one's mentioned 25 times over here in Psalm 136. Let's look at the characteristics of God here. Psalm 136, verse 1, will give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever. Oh, give thanks to the God of gods, for his mercy endures forever. Give thanks to the Lord of lords, for his mercy endures forever. You think God is going, all right, enough, enough. No, he allows it. Why? Why? Think about that. To he who alone does great wonders, for his mercy endures forever. And now David recites a history lesson. To him that by wisdom made the heavens, for his mercy endures forever. This past week, I looked up at the heavens around Tellico Plains, and it was just gorgeous. There were thunderstorms all in the background, just gorgeous. You saw the rain. When you can see those from far, they're amazing. And I'm thinking, this is God who made this. God who made the rain, and to see how it comes down and swirls, and then there is a rainbow there. I'm kind of going, you and I should think right away and remember that. Because of God's mercy. And God in his mercy said, I'll never do that again. I'll never set a flood to destroy mankind again. Verse 6, to he who stretched out the earth above the waters, for his mercy endures forever. He who made great lights, for his mercy endures forever. The sun to rule by day, for his mercy endures forever. The moon and stars to rule by night. Isn't that gorgeous? We take it, you know, we take for granted the sun, and it was hot this week. For those of you that were out in the sun, I like the sun, but it gets hot sometimes, really hot, and we can start to turn into the old Israelites. Man, it's just so hot out here all the time. And I have to admit, after going through a whole winter of no sun, I should be thankful and liking the sun. But God made this, and you probably already heard about this, if the earth was just 1% closer, it wouldn't work. It's perfection to a T of how God made everything, for his mercy endures forever. He who smote Egypt in their firstborn, more history here, for his mercy endures forever, and brought out Israel from among them, for his mercy endures forever, with a strong hand and with a stretched out arm, for his mercy endures forever. To he who divided the Red Sea into parts, for his mercy endures forever. You know, this is almost like going through the begets. Why did God put all those begets in there? Here's men that lived, and they're important to God. to see our history and where this lineage came from. And how few, by the way, back in Genesis, you see all the begets. And I've never done the math. We probably there's got to be some actuary that's done that. The math on how many people, by the time you have these generations and they multiply and you're living that long, 600 years, and you're begetting sons and daughters, how much of the earth was occupied at that time? We don't know those answers, but it's interesting, and God has it recorded. He's got this recorded too. So do we just not read it then? Let's just glance at it and go, by the way, let's just read His mercy forever times 25, and we're done with this. Or is it there for a purpose? It causes us to think and remember, doesn't it? Because that's what's lacking in this country. People don't remember because they're not being taught. And this is the whole point. We tend sometimes to forget how great God's mercy is in our lives. He is so forgiving and so merciful. Who divided the Red Sea into parts, for His mercy endures forever. I can't wait to see the video on that one. There's the question of how wide it was, how it dried so quickly. All the miracles that took place, were they actually fish coming out of the side? I wonder. I don't know, but I'd like to see it. I'd really like to see what happened, what took place. Will we be able to? God is God. I don't know why not, but fascinating. How wide was it? You know, when you take the numbers in, how wide could that have been? Some say that you couldn't see the sides. I don't know. Who overthrew Pharaoh and his host in the Red Sea? Could you imagine that? You're following the Israelites. They finally gain access to the land. Pharaoh and his army, it says, were out there, and they're kind of going, uh-oh. And that was on their tombstone. If you could even find them after that. I've heard one place, and through one of the crossings, of there's two arms down there. Some think that they crossed over the other arm. I don't know. I think it's interesting. But they said they found some chariot wheels down in the second arm. I'm not sure, but I just think it's really interesting. But again, when we think about what took place, here's Pharaoh, the great Pharaoh. You know, this is the most powerful guy in the face of this earth at this time. And he's looking and going, what's holding this up? God, He's not there for you. Bye. See you in the resurrection. We're going to see Pharaoh too. I wonder if he looks like Yul Brynner. But won't that be interesting? You will see Pharaoh. We will see all these people. And they'll be taught about the true God. They'll go, yeah, I remember. I really, oh, did I blow it back there? Yeah, you did. Now we're going to show you the way. We're going to show you about this God that put up with you for so long and that used you, though. Verse 16, to He who led His people through the wilderness, for His mercy endures forever. To He who smote great kings, for His mercy endures forever. And slew famous kings, for His mercy endures forever. And get specific, Sihon, the king of the Amorites. And Og, the king of Bashan, for His mercy endures forever. So these must have been pretty important kings who inflicted some damage and were pretty evil in that time. Verse 21, and gave their land for a heritage, for His mercy endures forever. A heritage to Israel, His servant. And that heritage, see, that's our heritage. You know, when you look back at the beginning of this country, that's what I see. Because I ask that question all the time. These guys who came over, and it was just basically a repeat Declaration of Independence. God said the king is going to be this way. He's going to tax you. Declaration of Independence, it's written on there. The king is this. He's this. Everything that you see in 1 Samuel 8. So these guys come over. God says, see, I told you that was going to happen. Now they come over with an appreciation for God, yet not really totally knowing the God that we know. They knew pieces. But I value those men that came over and did believe in God, who did chisel the Ten Commandments into our Supreme Court. Which, watch that and see if that's not chiseled out. And the heritage that we have, it was Thomas Jefferson who said the Bible should be the textbook of every school. Throw that one out. That's not happening. Separation of church and state. They don't even understand separation of church and state. That's how uneducated judges don't understand separation of church and state. And that's where our heritage has gone. These people died for their country. They died for their country. They died for the freedoms that the people today don't appreciate. They lost that. And they're not remembering their heritage. We not only remember ours, but we go back and remember our heritage that goes back even before to Abraham and the promises that were given to him, of which we are so blessed today. Because of anything that we did? No. No, because of God's mercy. Verse 23, who remembered us in our low estate, for his mercy endures forever. He has redeemed us from our enemies, for his mercy endures forever. Who gives food to all flesh, for his mercy endures forever. We see that all the time. I'm not sure if I told you this, but when we stayed with the Frenchaks a couple of weeks ago, I remember awakening in the morning to these birds. It's just, it's so neat if it's quiet enough around your place to listen to the birds in the morning, that robin. I think I've got that a little bit. Goes up. You ever hear that? It's so peaceful. And then while I'm listening to that, all of a sudden I hear this in the distance. Who's going to want? It's just like, I don't want to wake up like that in the morning, but I thought of God's sense of humor. It's so interesting that when that morning light hits, that rooster is going to crow. You better like that sound. But God who made that? So he made all these different birds with the different sounds, and they all know it when they come out of the egg. The robin egg, bird comes out, does the same song as mom. And I never saw mom over there going, this is how you do it. God did it. The rooster is going to sound like the rooster. Could you imagine a rooster? Let me listen to that. That's a rooster? Well, that's sure not going to wake you up in the morning either. But see, that's God, the God who made these things. And he talked about that in Matthew 6, verse 26, when he said, don't worry about all these things, folks. That's what the church is teaching today. Yes, are we concerned? Yes. But overcome with worry? No. All these things have got to happen. God said, behold the fowls of the air, for they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns. Or yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more important than they? God knows this. That's why I love the question, the test. Well, if you were on a desert island, and that's all you had was a pig, would you eat it? No, I'd start cracking up. Well, how come? Because I'd be looking up and kind of going, no chance. If this is a test, you got a great sense of humor, because that's not going to happen. You mean you would starve? I have a Father in heaven that knows every hair in my head, and he knows I'm not going to eat pork. Well, even if you're on a desert island, God knows I'm on the desert island. So somebody said, well, why don't you use it for bait? And I go, that's a great idea. Never thought of that. But I'm going to smile. And we ought to do that when we smile, when we know our Father in heaven and Jesus Christ, who are so merciful. Verse 26, I'll give thanks to the God of heaven, for his mercy endures forever. So what's this mean for us? Are you merciful? This is a good check. Have we been merciful? You know, in any situations this past week, you know, in one sense, I feel bad for these people, because they're putting, some of our leaders are putting us in a spot to take us down. But what did God say? What did Christ say? Forgive them. They don't even know what they're doing. They don't, there's so much ignorance. I get so mad sometimes at our Supreme Court. They don't know what they're doing. These are supposed to be some of the smartest men ever. And they're making these decisions. I'm kind of going, you're killing our country. God forgive them. They're going to realize that someday, that they were instrumental in bringing this country down. But let's look at us, because we know this. We're watching how not to do it. Are we kind? Kindness is a part of that. Are we short-tempered? Do we burst off? Or are we practicing being kind and being merciful? It takes some thought sometimes to cut through parts of our character that maybe we grew up like that, maybe we saw spouting off within our families. And so it might be harder for us, but we still have to cut through this. We've got to work on this. What does mercy look like? What's it have to do with these two guys? Why did Franz Stigler not pull the trigger? He had a reason to. Charlie Brown was an enemy. He had bombed German cities. Stigler had a duty to defend his homeland. And one more kill, this is interesting, one more kill, he'd receive the Iron Cross. That's like the top-notch award you would receive for being a fighter pilot. One more. But he's looking in there, he could have shot this guy down. Why didn't he pull the trigger? Charlie Brown always wondered what happened to the plane and the man that didn't shoot him down. Years later, he went looking for Stigler. It took years, but he found him. Stigler had left Germany, moved to Canada. Charlie Brown found him there, and a book was written. It's called A Higher Call. Why didn't he shoot? As Franz Stigler looked through the eyeglass with his finger on the trigger, these words ran through his head. A German. Matthew 5, verse 7. Guy read his Bible and shot down people. Blessed are the merciful. Why now? Why now? Blessed are the merciful, for they will obtain mercy. So what are we going to do? How did God call? Very interesting. You know, we know that God works, he works with all kinds of people, brethren. Yes, we have to remember who we are in the calling, the higher calling that we've been given, a very high calling, because with that comes a lot of responsibility. We have a responsibility to be merciful. But he allows other people to experience different things. He does answer the prayers of all people that appeal to him in sincerity. He does intervene, even on the battlefields, even in the air. Somehow, God put a thought in Stigler's mind, just at that time, that made a difference in a person dying and a wife receiving her husband when he got home. And this guy was going down. One more and he'd get the Iron Cross. This should have been a no-brainer for Stigler. And yet mercy runs through his head. Direct kill. And mercy comes to his head. So, if we see the example that's that way, even out in the world, what about us? We have a calling to become like God. That's the responsibility. That's why we can't be walking around and go, hey, look who we are. And I'm not saying that that's there either. But also what needs to be there is on the responsibility side. When we see things of this kind, that we've got to really take this in. God, am I merciful? Help me to grow in this area. See, every week, next week, it'll be something else. So let's focus in on, say, let me examine this week and see if that's where I am. God, show me what I need to do. Give me the strength, more of your spirit, that I can be merciful just like you. When you get mad, if you get angry, just sing that song. Be merciful to others as your Father is to you. Bring on the element of mercy. Are we going to be like God and show mercy? Blessed are the merciful, for they will obtain mercy. See, that's those elements. It's the give and the receiving. Both elements. God's mercy never fails.